The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You're in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, on a count of four. Brady's here, Rich is here, Arnie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
What? I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, you couldn't hear me there. It's so hot in here.
All of a sudden.
I may have to take my shirt off.
Oh. So you're not trying to... Come on.
I'm only like another week or two of working out at Orange Theory Fitness before I start taking my shirt off in public.
A week or two.
Hey, but you got it, you flaunt it.
But you've got it all right.
That's right.
You've got plenty.
You don't have anything.
Sure he does. He's got about 280 pounds worth of stuff.
It's hot in here, though.
Well, what? Jeez. This building is 7,000. I believe the Pilgrims discovered and built this building. And the heater, we've been talking about this for 20 years in this building. It just, for no reason, in the middle of the day, the heat just starts blasting in here. It could be zero outside. It could be 105 outside. It just picks its time, and here it is.
Our engineer loves it when you talk about it with
him. He gets
him.
So mad.
He loves it. If he walked
in right now, I'd change the subject.
I played tech guru today. I was fixing all kinds of things, internet connections. I was very, very busy today.
In what way?
I just said I was fixing. I was playing tech repair guy. I was playing internet, or I was playing IT guy.
Better you than me.
Yeah, I'm not savvy in that type of stuff.
I don't know how to respond to something I don't understand.
I was fixing internet connections. I was putting technology together. It was way above my pay grade, and I'm making dinner tonight. So,
look at you,
spaghetti.
It's going to be pasta with.
Yeah, of course. That's all you can probably
boil.
I knew
water.
How did I know that?
There's going to be ground beef in there, so it's going to be pasta with meat sauce.
Yeah, I do that sometimes.
Yeah, so that's what I'm making. Salad also.
So you just burn a burger and chop it up and throw it into the sauce.
When you're done making the spaghetti, I hate when morons.
Wow.
And my wife does this. Takes the spaghetti and runs it underwater to clean it. I'm like, no.
Why do you have to clean spaghetti?
You don't clean the spaghetti. You have to drain the...
Yeah, you drain it, but then some people run it under cold water. And you look at me like I'm nuts.
I'm not doing that.
Oh, a lot of people do. Just put a big chunk of butter on top.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I take a half a stick of butter in every time I eat spaghetti.
Really?
It's a miracle I've made it to 57.
Oh, absolutely. I love that. That's the secret ingredient. Now,
if I could just put butter on everything and have no other taste besides butter, I would eat. That would be it.
I'm going to have a butter sandwich.
Speaking of butter, I do want garlic bread. I want garlic bread.
Just buy the bread and get garlic spread and throw that on top. A whole jar of that stuff goes a long way.
It's a miracle we're all still here. By the way, you wear a lot of crazy shirts. This is the most ridiculous one I've ever seen.
I don't understand what's wrong with this.
Look at that shirt, Arnie.
99.3.
And it's got a Mariners logo. Can you look at 99.3 in affiliation with the Seattle Mariners and know what that means?
I assume it's the home of the Mariners, I'm going to guess.
No.
What, 99.3? So you're talking about a radio station.
Yeah, is that what that is?
No, it's far more ridiculous.
No, 99.3. It's the percentage of Hall of Fame votes that Ken Griffey got on the first ballot. 99.3% of the votes.
And he's wearing a shirt in commemoration of the percentage of votes that Ken Griffey got.
What is wrong with that?
That's insane.
If I had a lighter, your shirt would be going up in flames.
Why?
I would be just burning it on you.
It's just so mean.
Oh, my goodness.
But the one thing I did like about it is that you were forced to ask what the hell it meant.
I thought it was a radio station.
The home of Seattle is AM 710.
I still believe
Rock 99.3, home of the Mariners. Here's Led Zeppelin.
That's the seventh time I've heard you say that in that same voice. Yeah. Do you have any other fake station that you can use?
Wow.
And I never, ever have used that voice ever in 38 years.
You didn't used to do that?
Oh, God. I would quit the job if I had to talk like
that. It's 101.3 ESPN. Hey. Patriots lose. Giants win.
Here's another 40 minutes of nonstop classic hits.
Almost didn't make it today's show today.
Tomorrow.
New guy played basketball last night, decides he's got to guard me.
Yeah.
And I must be really good, Brady, because a lot of people have a tough time guarding me. He decides he's going to jump into me, knock me down. My elbow hits the ground, and of course, I think my arm is broken. Leaves a big knot on my elbow. So on this elbow, this one right here.
The other one.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty.
You can't really get knots on bones.
Oh, it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad.
You can get bruises.
Put it this way, two guys had to help me up.
That's because they couldn't lift you.
They had to help you two with your elbow.
Actually, two and a half. Yeah. Because one guy was a little scrawny guy.
280 is not light.
So from now on, I told the guy who did that, I said, from now on, when you leave your feet and you're going to come at me, I'm going to put my elbow right where your neck is going to be. And your neck is going to, and you could puncture a windpipe. I don't know. And I'll laugh a little bit when you're going, breathing for air, going,
oh my gosh.
Well, really? I'm tired of it. I mean, it happens to me every time. Enough. Brady does it. Not people jumping on my back all the time.
I don't understand how that's even possible because you don't go inside the lane.
I don't even leave my feet.
You're standing at half court doing nothing. They just attack you.
They want to block my shot so bad. So I said, from now on, elbow to the neck. Elbow to the neck.
You know what I would really like to do? Is
elbow to the neck.
The NBA Combine is going on right now, and you're seeing all this stuff. You know, Grayson Allen just had a 40-plus inch vertical.
Yeah.
I really want to test your vertical.
Oh. Four? Yeah. 36 inch. Yeah, exactly. I said 4 inches.
Did he leave the floor? I couldn't tell.
I don't know if you could get off the ground.
Am I not? I don't think you could slide a piece of paper under me if I jump. That's how bad it is. Oh, geez. Really, I got home today, and a whole brand-new bag of pistachios.
Not good. Pistachios are so overrated.
But,
I don't know. They're pretty good.
I love
peanuts,
them.
Great. Sunflower seeds, great. Yeah. Pistachios.
Pistachios, you got to work a little bit.
Pistachios, not if you just get the ones in the middle without the shells.
Yeah.
You can do that.
It just seems like a lot of work to get this tiny little thing in the middle.
Well, anyway, I came home, the dog ripped it open and ate all the pistachios.
And you have an emergency vet trip later tonight?
We called the vet to see if the dog was going to die. I think he's going to be okay. He's getting fixed this weekend.
Oh.
So, I don't. We might not
take his spirit?
Yeah, we might not even be able to do it now because he stuffed his face full of like 5 pounds of pistachios with the shells on.
Maybe
I don't
he
know.
Knew.
What's the worst thing your dog ever ate? I mean, like, I've seen dogs eat batteries.
My dog so far doesn't really eat anything bad. The worst thing that he did in terms of that was I made a frozen pizza and I left it out to cool on the counter. He jumped up on the counter and ate every slice.
Oh,
except for one.
Duh. You know what time me and my three roommates go out for lunch and I guess my roommate goes to the bathroom, comes back, goes, okay, where's my sandwich? Come on, who's messing with me? It was a meatball sandwich. I go, where'd you put it? He goes, I left it on the floor here. I go, what, are you an idiot?
Why would anyone leave a meatball sandwich on the floor?
Well, it was on a plate. I go,
because it's on the floor.
I know. I go, what?
How stupid are you?
And then we look over at the dog, and it had meatball on its face.
What do you expect?
I go, yes.
Let's put this meatball sandwich on the floor with a dog in the house and see how long it lasts.
On a plate, especially. it was a husky. I go, what do you think the dog did? It ain't the meatball sandwich, Dad. And he goes, I was only gone like 4 minutes. I go, I'm sure it only ate it in a minute. It didn't wait the whole 4 minutes.
I've never had a dog, but the worst thing my cat ever ate was almost my entire couch about 3 years ago.
That seems like the flavor of choice or couches, aren't it?
Yeah.
It's great when you're trying to show your house as you get ready to sell it and it's in pieces.
I've seen dogs just really chew up a whole couch. It's crazy.
Great talent.
And by the way, Town Fair Tire text line, what's the worst thing your dog ever ate? 802-655-6672. I mean, I've seen some bad stuff. I've seen dogs like chew through doors and stuff like that to get out. I don't know. They're just, just go through
what?
Doors.
You know? Doors.
Yeah.
You definitely did not say that. Yeah, you said like
doors.
Through doors.
That's a door.
I mean, like chew up wood. I mean, just like with razor sharp teeth or something like that. It's amazing.
Speaking of which, has that crazy animal roaming your neighborhood attacked anyone yet?
The bobcat?
Yeah, catamount.
No, but I don't give it a chance against my dog Stanley. I'll tell you that. My dog Stanley will chow anything. It's crazy.
I love Cody in Plattsburgh's idea. He says, have a 101.3 ESPN NBA combine. So we could get you doing the vertical. We could get you doing the shuttle run. We could get you on some kind of,
how about 30-second layups or something?
No. Well, no. What we would do is you would have to shoot threes from the top of the key, and every time you shoot from the top of the key, you'd have to run back to half court, and we would say how many minutes would it take you to hit like 10 threes doing that?
Oh wow!
could be a whole day experience.
Yeah, that could be a long time. Yeah.
Ambulance will be standing by.
Gabe in Winooski said his dog ate mouse poison.
Yeah, you know, it's probably the last thing he ever ate.
You know, some dogs, it doesn't even bother them.
That's
they have
awful.
Like iron stuff. That is awful.
Wow.
What the hell?
Why are you sharing us?
I don't know. I should pre-read some of this stuff here. My dog ate a remote. Yeah, well, which dog has not eaten a yeah. remote? You know what I mean? Come on now. Kids' toys, stair rails.
Wow.
That was Emma in South Burlington.
Okay. And another one says, Buddy's dogs chewed through a wall to get to two layers of sheetrock. Oh, my goodness.
That's what a prize.
See, that's not a dog. That's like another animal.
It is.
That's like a cheetah or something. Yeah. Sir, you don't have a dog. You have a bear. And it's eating the inside of your house. That's what it's doing there. I mean, when it's eating through to get the sheetrock and stuff like that.
No, yeah. It ate two layers of sheetrock.
Oh,
it ate through the wall.
It's a bear.
That hardly seems like a real prize after all the effort he put in.
You got coyotes in your house, buddy.
Sheetrock.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's just somebody said 3 pounds of chocolate. Now that's deadly, right? Isn't that deadly
I don't
for
know,
dogs?
No, but yes. I've done that.
Or
before.
Is that just a rumor?
No, that's deadly.
That is deadly.
That sounds like every hangover I've ever had.
Yes. Someone said my dog ate through a live power cord. read that, Brady.
She only did it once.
I should have. What? Gosh!
It's like the shark at the end of Jaws 2 when he eats the power
cord. Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it was the last thing he ever did.
Well, that in that movie, that's great out there. So anyway, if you want to bring those in, because I know people's dogs have chewed, just some horrible. I mean, of course, they eat, like, coins. I've seen dogs eat coins and stuff like that.
As they're not quarters.
Your one dog ate through a carpet.
Yeah. It threw a car. Every time we come home, it's eaten through something.
And yet you love them to death.
Yeah, I love them to death. And one other thing real quick. Went to my kid's place, say, where he was working. I didn't tip him. And I guess Twitter was a buzz because I didn't tip my own kid.
You don't need to tip your own kid.
That's what I said. He goes in my wallet and tips himself.
He already has his 12-cent allowance that you give him for taking the garbage out every
week. What, is he a prisoner?
It's not so much about tipping your son. It's about that position doesn't need a tip.
Yeah. You know? Wow.
You know?
He gets a lot of tips, though. He does get
a lot
of tips.
Sure, he does, but.
Yeah, he gets a lot of tips. He doesn't. You're right, it doesn't. But even if he was waiting on me, I don't think I'd leave him a tip.
Oh, like, see, then you should.
Oh, come on. You're going my wallet enough. Come on now. Enough of that. All right, I'm not here tomorrow. Busy show. What do we got coming up the rest of the week? And what do we got coming up today, Brady?
Well, we had a blast at the Windjammer yesterday.
Yes, we did.
Remember, if you've got that Amazon Echo, and we did get a text from Adam in South Burlington who said he's listening to us via the Amazon Echo. So all you need to tell your Amazon Echo or your Echo Dot is enable 101.3 ESPN. And then once you've done that one time, then once you've enabled us, all you need to say is open 101.3 ESPN. Mistake of the day, you can get in 802-655-6672, brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, where they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. We'll discuss Paul Pierce's comments on the Celtics. Big deal, little deal, no deal at 435. Former NFL head coach, Coach of the Year with the Bears in 2001, Dick Duron, stops by at 5 o'clock.
Wow.
A troubling trend for the Patriots. But first, is the honeymoon over for Alex Cora? We saw this article in The Athletic, and we had to talk about it. They started out 17-2. They're 12-12 since, and some stuff is starting to hit the fan for the new Sox manager.
No, first of all, the honeymoon isn't over. And look, I've always said this from the very beginning of me doing sports talk radio. I really believe the baseball manager does about the least out of all possible managers, coaches, you know, football, baseball, basketball, hockey.
Fill out the lineup card.
Yeah, and they don't even do that now. No, seriously, it could be the upper the GM.
They
it could be
it
the upper office.
At the minor leagues, the higher ups tell you who to play.
They in the major leagues, they don't even you don't even get to sometimes do the lineup card or even the batting order. But anyway, I always felt that. No, I don't think it is. How could you have that? Boy, that's a lack of patience. If that's true, and it obviously explains why John Farrell's not here anymore, because the guy went back to back AL East titles. So you know, maybe I should rethink that, because if they got fed up with a guy like that that won back to back AL East titles, I don't know, maybe they're getting sick of Cora, though. I think that's absolutely ridiculous.
I was a little surprised at his reaction. I thought overreaction to the Carson Smith comments. I mean, were those – he said, I think my shoulder's tired in general just from pitching. I've thrown a lot lately, and I think my arm's tired. Is that an attack at Cora?
I don't think that's an attack, but he's definitely saying I've been overused. I don't know that it's an attack, but I think it's honest.
I think it's honest. I think he's saying that he's pitched a lot. I didn't get the impression he was mad about that necessarily. What pitcher is going to be mad that he's making a lot of appearances?
I don't know that he's mad about it, but I thought it was surprising. Again, I thought it was refreshing to hear the honesty from Carson Smith about it. But when you throw in the fact, look, the David Price situation ruffled feathers for fans and for people around the organization or people who are close to the organization. Alex Cora had to deal with that. He's had to deal with benching a lovable player in Jackie Bradley Jr. The catcher still can't hit. So the people in this lineup, a lot of them can't hit. You're at a third of the lineup that can't hit their way out of a paper bag.
Right. Yep.
And then now you throw in Carson Smith calling out his overuse. I don't say the honeymoon period is over, Arnie, in terms of, oh, they want him gone. I don't mean like, I don't think Jen McCaffrey is the one who wrote it.
Right.
I don't think she means that way. I think she means that the part of the job, the time period where we praise everything that Alex Cora does, that is over. We are now in the controversy stage.
Well, make no mistake about it. When you're batting 190 like Jackie Bradley Jr., you're not lovable. Nobody's lovable at 190. So let's go ahead and say that. Yeah. He's not a fan favorite anymore when you're batting 190 and people want you out of the lineup.
And at some point, you had I respect the fact that Cora not only took him out for a game, he took him out for an entire series.
He's only played in three of the last nine games.
Yeah. I mean, and you can't have that black hole in the lineup every night with a guaranteed 0 for 3 or 0 for 4.
No, but before the question Brady asked, though, was that part of the reasons why you'd be a little bit sour on Cora? And absolutely not. I mean, no. You got to go in somebody in the lineup that's playing better. I mean, that's all sports. That's in football, baseball, basketball, hockey, whatever. You've got to play the guy that's better. Nobody's going to go ahead and criticize you. Though they did criticize when they replaced Eli Manning.
But they're not going to criticize management, don't you think?
They criticized everybody. They criticized everybody. And, of course, one coach isn't here anymore. But besides that, though, I don't think he's obviously in the Eli Manning range. I don't think anybody's really upset.
I think the Carson Smith thing is the biggest stain right now on the Alex Cora resume, and we've ignored any issues because the team has played so well and they've been hovering in first place or hovering around first place. The Carson Smith thing I do think is interesting, and if we were playing big deal, little deal, no deal right now, I'd say it's a very big deal. The fact that Carson Smith said, you know, I've pitched a lot lately. This is a guy who missed almost all of last season, missed a year and a half with Tommy John surgery, and now here they've put him in. He's got 18 appearances in 40 plus games. That's a lot of appearances. And
go ahead.
I don't know that he's been overused because Cora says we go through the proper channels and we've got our sports medicine team that studies him and we talk to him and we communicate and he's not telling us any differently. And the one time he has told us differently, we've sat him. I don't know that Cora is wrong, but the fact that he has said, I have pitched a lot, I took those comments to mean something.
Well, what's being left out of this is that his lack of ability to discipline himself and not have temper tantrums is what caused the injury. I mean, directly, indirectly, it was caused by him getting used too much, don't you think?
He says he throws his glove even when he's playing catch.
No, it just seems like he masked what he did there. I mean, I don't know. I just don't.
Self-responsibility.
I don't hear his words as directly, going after like a vendetta against his coach. I didn't see it like that.
I got to get to these two texts. Town Fair Tire text line. Keith, my dog chewed through a New York Giants foam finger from the 90s. I couldn't look at him for weeks.
How'd the team do afterwards?
And wait a minute, this one, Devin in the Essex Junction, my dog attacked a porcupine, had 40 quills stuck in his face. 40,
that's like the worst thing that could happen to any living being is attacking a porcupine.
You just pull it out. How tough is it?
No, stop. 40 of them?
Yeah,
stop.
40.
Well, why don't we find out? We'll get you a porcupine, Arnie. And you can go at him.
Brady, what's coming up next?
Coming up next, you might want to get your phones ready, and you'll see that in about 45 seconds from now. Paul Pierce, though, he's opened up about the Boston Celtics. What did he have to say?
All right, we'll tell you that next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Step one, watch sports. Step two, talk about sports. Now, back to the huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. I'm not here tomorrow. I got a day off. Thank goodness. I'm going down to Connecticut.
Off.
I'm going down to my niece's bat mitzvah. My sister-in-law's 20,000 square foot house down in Western Connecticut.
Did you give her a lot of money? Isn't that what you do at bat mitzvahs?
That's what you do at bat mitzvahs. So yes, I went in my mother-in-law's purse, took a bunch of money, and I will be writing a check. Am I just out of all the people her daughter could marry? She got lucky enough for me.
What a prize.
Yeah, you bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, you just write checks.
I have one?
Yeah, well, get a bar mitzvah and you can have one. And then
I have to be Jewish in, what, 13?
Yeah. It's great because your parents pay for the party. You keep the checks.
Wow.
And that's the way it works there. So, you know, each person should probably give about $250 to $300. So she'll make out like a banshee. I don't know what she'll do. Buy herself a car or something like that.
Aren't you supposed to put it away?
Yeah, what are you going to do with it, though? Nowadays, kids don't do stuff
like that. Oh, yeah, like 13-year-olds are going to get $500 in cash and go, oh, let's invest it.
But what also are they going to buy? What does a 13-year-old need for $500?
Oh, tons of whatever. PS4, Nintendo, PlayStation.
I don't know.
And television.
That's about when I first started paying off my credit cards at 13.
Yeah. By the way, my dog, the one that ate the pistachios, also ate a bag of cannabis calm treats, and I'm serious.
Cannabis?
Calm treats.
What is that?
Well, what you is know cannabis? What it's,
I know what cannabis is.
Somebody gave my wife a bag of cannabis dog treats.
Well, that's why he wanted the pistachios after.
Well, no. That's the funniest thing you ever said.
Maybe
that
some
is
pizza.
Great. Look at that. Yeah. And that didn't even affect him. He was still wild as ever. So I don't know what I'm going to do with this dog. It's too much. All right, what's going on with Paul Pierce? I want to tell you what Rob Parker had to say also, because I thought that was kind of funny, Brady. That's a little bit nuts, to be honest
with you. Paul Pierce, who's now had his number retired in Boston and now works for ESPN, he was talking about the current group of Celtics. And he talked specifically about Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Al Horford. So I'll start with what he said about Horford. I thought that was the most interesting. He's, you know, and they played against each other a bunch. He goes, Horford looks so young out there, I can't even tell he's been in the NBA this long. He's someone you really learn to appreciate if you see him on a daily basis, but sometimes he doesn't get the credit he deserves right away because his game is not sexy. And I'm with him, and I think it's really come out in this playoffs that Al Horford has been the key to this team. And, Rich, you've harped on Al Horford at times. I harped on Al Horford last year because he had too many games last year where it was 6 points, eight rebounds.
He was inconsistent. Yeah.
And he wasn't putting up the giant offensive numbers we expect from a max deal player. We wanted 24 and 10 from him every night.
Yeah.
I would go so far as to say this, I think. I want to see if you agree with me. If this team had either Kyrie Irving or Gordon Hayward and was missing Al Horford, I don't think they're in this position.
No, at both ends of the floor. That's the thing. I think he is about as valuable as anybody at the other end of the floor. I'm talking about defensively. But you're right. He came from Atlanta, and it was a little bit like KG. He comes from Minnesota, and everybody's expecting 28 and 16 every single night with five block shots. But that wasn't the system that he came into. I don't think Al Horford came into the Boston system under Brad Stevens as a guy who was needed to put up 24 and 15. So what he's done is he's gotten better at things that the Celtics need to have him get better at. Defense, blocking shots, assists. I mean, his career highs in assists have been the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and I really wanted the Celtics to go and get Andrew Bogut. I harped on that last year before he got injured, before Cleveland picked him up and he got hurt. And I wanted him as a low-risk, high-reward signing at the beginning of the year. And the reason was, I thought, because, 7 foot, this team doesn't rebound all that well in the past. He's a great passer from the top of the key, and he would help kind of flow that offense through him as a big man. And Horford has done all of that in these playoffs. I really do believe that if Kyrie Irving were playing and Al Horford was out, I don't think this team is playing right now. He has given stability to the front court. He's been stability in terms of a leadership position. He's a good go-between the young guys and Brad Stevens, who's relatable to both sides.
Yep.
He has been exactly what this team has needed, and we undersold him for his first 2 years in Boston.
You know, say for what it's worth, too, I'm just going to give you a stats. I'm not saying good or bad. I think since his second year in the league, and I was looking up some of his stats, this is his worst season in 10 years, statistically.
Statistically, yeah.
Not much.
But that's not his job anymore.
No. Not much. Maybe a point or two under the average. His field goal percentage, certainly one of the worst in 10 years of shooting. Because he was always over a 50% shooter, I think, for the most part.
But he is shooting 43% from three this year, where he never has shot above, he shot
42% from three.
42.9.
Yeah,
that would be
43%. I'm sorry. I thought you said 47. 43%,
He's 43% from three, and as the game continues to evolve, that's a much bigger part of his game than it used to be.
Yes. Yeah. I'm just saying, I mean, could you imagine if he was, but of course he's older now. So you do forget how long he's been in the league, and I mean, geez, Rich, me and you remember his father,
Tito.
Yeah. So you know, look, maybe he's a little underappreciative, but on a team like this, this is absolutely perfect for him. Yeah, I got to be honest.
And he's acclimated his game, and he's, like I said, I'll mention Garnett again. I thought Ray Allen, when he came to the Celtics, was that too. He wasn't just that guy who needed to put up 25 points every night, and you'd see he'd go from 24 in 1 year, and then he'd come to the Celtics and put up 18. But, hey, look, they won a championship with him, so it all worked out okay.
And it's surprising you say that, because when you think of Hayward being hurt and Kyrie being hurt, the first person you think of who needs to step up more, my first answer when all that happened would be, oh, well, Al Horford's got to step up. He's the veteran on this team. He's the guy who's been in this position before. He needs to take the brunt of the scoring, and that hasn't been the case.
No.
Now, he has scored certain games well in the playoffs. Now, he scored very well against Milwaukee, especially early in that series, especially game one of the playoffs. But it's still been the young guys, and it's been Jaylen Brown, it's been Jason Tatum and Terry Rozier, but Horford has been the anchor of everything. And Brad Stevens really has been pretty effusive in his praise.
This is the best team he's had in his life, I think. For the most part, 10 years in Atlanta. I don't know the history of the Atlanta Hawks, but
that's not much.
It wasn't with Dominique. So after post-Dominique, they were not that great. There was 1 year they were, real. I think after they picked up what's that great score?
Well, Kyle Korver was good for them for a while.
But otherwise, he's been on mostly losing teams.
Atlanta got the number one seed in the East, if I'm not mistaken.
There was one year they were really good. But other than that, I think he's got to at least be sub-500. And had the majority of bad teams in Atlanta. Am I wrong on that? Is that not right? I get the stick of the day.
I'm not hitting the right buttons to tell you immediately.
Yeah. we're getting a lot on the Town Fair Tire text line. Brian in Richmond said, mistake of the day, Arn. You said Paul Parker for Paul Pierce. No, I actually said I want to get into what Rob Parker had to say also, because my colleague at Fox Sports 1 guys said that, and he went on TV and said this on Fox, that the Boston Celtics still have no chance against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Even though they're up 2-0, he still said because they're 1-4 on the road, they have no chance still against the Cavaliers.
2014-15, they were 60-22.
Wow. Okay, so that was a good one. Well, is that their best year?
They got swept by the Cavs in the, the Eastern Finals?
Well, Al Horford, his rookie year was, I think, 07-08, if I'm not mistaken. If that's the case, he made the playoffs every year of his tenure in Atlanta.
Mistake of the day.
And he was, but he was under 500 twice in that time.
Not bad at all. Why did I think they were lousy?
They made the playoffs twice, going under 500. But
really,
they're just one of those teams nobody pays attention to, including in Atlanta.
I thought they were like sub 5.
53, 44, 44, 60, 48, 43. Those are win totals that the Hawks have had in the last 10 years.
Yeah, they've had some good runs. I mean, they had Paul Millsap for a while. Jeff Teague was their point guard. I mean, they had some pretty good players to go with Horford down there.
Mookie Blaylock, Theo Ratliff, Dikembe Mutombo.
I wonder what I'm going to say.
Those are old Atlanta Hawks, not Al Horford.
I just think of Dominique Wilkins.
Yeah. Mojo and Milton. What's that word? What is he saying? Shoten? Does the absolute butchering of an English language count as a mistake of the day? Did one of us mispronounce
the
word?
To go with the word Shoten.
I don't even know what that. No,
calling the kettle black or whatever.
Big
the
Mike and McGillicuddy's Al Horford is used to the disrespect and does his business every night, solid as a rock, and the players know better than to say he's underrated. Great guy.
It feels a little Robert Parrish-ish to me. Parrish was a little bit more high profile.
Oh, stop! But he's Parrish is a Hall of Famer.
That's because he was always good on a winning
team.
I'm talking about the quiet guy that just gets the job done, works like a dog, doesn't put up 25-12 every night, but wins.
You know who he feels like to me? And again, this is another Hall of Famer you're going to balk at. He feels like the poor man's Tim Duncan. And Tim Duncan was an all-timer, and I understand he's one of the best 50 players in NBA history, and he could get you 27-15 if you needed it. But when I just talk about a guy who's quiet, who's methodical, who goes about his business, who plays well on both ends of the floor, and gives it to you consistently. Now, again, there's a big difference between 27 points a game and 14 points a game, which is what, Horford averaged 13 points a game this year. In the playoffs, he's been better at times. But just in the way that they play, Horford reminds me of Tim Duncan, but on a much less scoring level.
All right. Town Fair Tire text line getting a lot on that. 802-655-6672 if you want to go ahead and jump on in. It's so funny as we're talking about this, but it's just spinning in my head. A lot of people aren't going to be happy next year to be on this team. A lot of people are not going to be happy. Not a lot of balls to go around. Not everybody's going to go and get their shots off. That's for damn sure. All right, Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Next, you're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back to the huddle. It's time for our newest feature.
Maybe this one will sweep the nation also.
It's time for Big Deal.
Rich, you guys are missing the point. This is a huge deal.
Little deal.
Oh, please, Arnie. This is nothing.
Or no deal.
You guys are both wrong. It's in the middle. How am I even still listening to you?
On 101.3 ESPN.
And I was just thinking, my sister-in-law has a six-bedroom, like 20,000-square-foot house, and there's no room for me and my wife. I just don't understand how that's possible. I just don't get it.
Well, I think it's a hint to be taken.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Yeah. That's okay. That's why there's Motel 6 out there. Time for Big Deal, Little Deal, No Deal.
Wow.
Wow, I got him on that one. Oh, did I get him on that one? Wow. I got him good. I haven't got him like that in a while.
That was 10 to 20 seconds.
I was reading Tristan Williston's text, all right? Big deal, little deal, no deal. Question number one. To aid their ailing bullpen, the Red Sox today signed reliever Josh Smith, who spent 3 years with the Oakland A's in their bullpen. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
I mean, it's a medium deal because you have to get somebody, but not just him. I mean, him personally, his numbers. First of all, I'm like, who? Didn't he play for, like, in the NBA for the Atlanta Hawks?
Yes,
matter of fact, that was who it was.
Yes.
They played for Stanford.
Yes, they also have one with Pawtucket. So now when he gets optioned to AAA, they'll have two guys named Josh Smith.
I don't know. Maybe I should get down the little deal. When I say middle deal, it should be little deal. Because right now, look, they just had to plug somebody into the hole. He doesn't have good numbers out there, so forget about it. But they had to get somebody
in. I understand you have to say little deal because you have to put a standing up, breathing human being into that slot. But, I mean, you might as well throw Arnie in there. This guy has absolutely no numbers. He's just been... I mean, I'm just looking at his numbers. ERA 5.30 over his career. And there's no sign that anything's gotten any better.
Well,
so,
he's not
going to
go out and get his jersey?
I mean, I just look at this, and I just, and it's all I can go by because I've never heard of him. And I see these numbers, and I'm going, this guy's going to be terrible. They put him into a 4-3 situation with a one-run lead in the sixth or seventh inning. He comes in with his ERA of 5.5. That makes it a big deal.
It's little deal to me. I think he's going to start in AAA. He's just depth for the depth as you move through the season in case more guys get injured. He has major league experience that helps. He hasn't been all that successful, but he did have a 14-2 strikeout-to-walk ratio this year in AAA with the Mariners. He couldn't make the Mariners, but he's going to come and help the Red Sox.
In AAA, yes.
So, look, if he throws strikes, that's encouraging, but ultimately, it's a little deal. Question number two, Carson Smith, a much more prominent Red Sox reliever, says his shoulder was tired, possibly from overuse. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal because... Are you a knucklehead? I mean, who would ever say something like that? That's like somebody saying, coach is playing me way too minutes in the NBA. I've got to cut back my minutes. I play 15 minutes, got to cut me back down to 11. I mean, who the hell would ever say something like that? Would a running back ever say, yeah, I get the ball 25 times a game. We've got to cut me. Don't give me the ball so much. I don't want the ball so much. I mean, who the hell says that? And coming from a guy who I'm like, what? Does this guy win a Cy Young or something? Did I miss something here that he's getting overworked? You should be lucky we're bringing him in from the bullpen, for crying out loud. I'd shut my pie hole if I were you.
Set me straight on this one. You might know better, Brady. Don't pitchers talk with people within the organization virtually every night? I'm talking like managers all the way on up. Here's a guy coming off of major surgery, and he's pitching a lot. Don't they go to a guy the night before he's going to pitch and they know he's going to pitch and say, how you feeling? I mean,
yes.
I'm talking mostly Alex Cora here.
It's usually not Alex Cora.
Or the pitching coach, the bullpen coach,
yes,
whatever.
The bullpen coach, the pitching coach, they report to Alex Cora. Then there's the medical people that say, well, look, for a guy who's had his kind of history, what should his workload be? Yes, the idea that people aren't talking to him is just not true. And Cora said that. I'll say it's a big deal, too. It's a big deal. That our sparkly new toy in Alex Cora now has a bit of taint to it, and it's a big deal that this guy is putting the blame on somebody other than himself.
Right.
No, I'll go with big deal just because you don't hear of this very often. This seems like a kind of a unique situation. I've never heard a pitcher say, they're just using me too much. I can't play this much. This is bad. Yep. That just seems preposterous. You're right. I've never heard an athlete ever say that once.
Question number three, big deal, little deal, no deal. Patriots wide receiver Philip Dorsett has restructured his contract heading into as we approach training camp or the thought of training camp in July. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
I'll just give you a little deal, even though it's really no deal. Why? Because he's saving, it'll get about $200,000 to clear the cap for somebody else, which means they really didn't. And I know this happens all over the place. Every team does something like this. So I don't even know. I didn't even know $200,000 was a lot of money. I mean, is it $200,000 from one guy and another three or four from one guy? And next thing you know, it adds up to like $1 or $2 million. Because $200,000, if it's just a $200,000 alone, that's like change between the cushions.
Signing bonus for a undrafted free agent.
Okay, well, I guess that's what they wanted for. But it seems like if you're starting to worry about your last $200,000. You've not done a good job with the books.
Hell, you make that in a weekend just doing your national quarter of billion
of course.
Show. The reason I don't think this is any deal at all is because it's Philip Dorsett. If this is a major guy and he's restructuring his contract, I think it would probably mean a lot more money would be changing hands or involved, at least in it. But with Philip Dorsett, I just don't think there's enough money for it to be any deal.
It's a big deal, actually, because Philip Dorsett was due under his old agreement, was due a roster bonus on the fifth day of training camp. So he was do more money the fifth day of training camp, but if the Patriots didn't want to give that to him, he became an easy cut-down candidate right away in training camp. So him restructuring his deal allows him to stick through training camp longer because he's not going to be due that bonus, and he's going to get a better opportunity to make the team. So I think this move actually has a significant impact on the Patriots wide receiver battle as a whole.
You know, there's some people that would, I don't know if this works out in his, some people would say, give me the damn bonus, cut me and I'll go hook up another team.
They would cut him before the bonus was due.
Okay, so you know what, if a team's that bad, and I was going to say, when somebody restructures it, either it's a guy making a boatload of money because they get a boatload of save, or it's a guy that's on the fence there and they're like, hey, if you want to stay with the team, this is the way it's got to be done. But if somebody said that to me, I'd say, you know what, let's start looking for another team. Somebody that's going to say, hey, we really want, need, and respect you. Not that we're trying to look to save your salary. I would start thinking maybe I want to go somewhere else.
Question four, big deal, little deal, no deal. So Pro Football Focus put out their top 25 under 25 rankings today. And Giants safety Landon Collins was ranked the third best player under 25. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
I mean, it's little deal. Rankings, everybody loves a list. I love lists. Who was number one and two, Brady?
Jalen Ramsey was two, and number one was Nick Bosa. Joey Bosa, sorry.
See, because I'm bad at eight, because I'm thinking, Gurley, how old is he?
He's on the list.
And he won top three?
How could he not be number one?
And I would say, what about Carson Wentz? Is he over 25? Is Carson Wentz over 25 years old?
I'll tell you the list.
I'll tell you why I think it's a big deal is because the Giants, the Giants need a combination of so many different things, but what they need to do if they're going to get themselves back into this thing and get out of the 3-13 crap that they dealt with last year, they got to get young and just develop it over time. And I think he's exactly what they need at a very key position.
So before I give my take on that, so here's how they did it.
Yeah.
The top 25 under 25 is the 25 best players in the league that will be under 25 years old at the start of the regular season.
Oh, okay.
So Joey Bosa, number one. Jalen Ramsey, number two. Landon Collins, number three. DeForest Buckner of the 49ers, number four. Deion Jones, Falcons linebacker, number five. Tre'Davious White, Bills cornerback, number six. Marshawn Lattimore of the Saints. Myles Garrett of the Browns. Ezekiel Elliott, Alvin Kamara. Todd Gurley is 12th.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I kind of, I'm like, well, you were wrong. Gurley's not on that list as you were reading it. Then you said down at number 12. I'm like, I thought for sure that he was going to not make the, you know, that you made a mistake or something like that.
That's Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota are 20 and 21.
Huh. That's a disrespect to Marcus Mariota. That's insane.
So you,
and that's a
Bosa
quarterback, too. Well, that's crazy.
Carson Wentz is 25 right now.
Oh, I don't respect their list.
24 worse than Joey Bosa?
I don't respect the list anymore. I've lost respect. Hey, come on, now.
What are they basing this on? What are the
can't be because of wins and losses. I mean, potential.
This sounds almost sabermetric when it comes to football. There's something in there, passes defended and things like that I'm just not seeing.
Yeah.
It's a big deal, by the way. Landon Collins is great. Sure. Landon Collins is the most important player on this Giants team outside of a quarterback moving forward. If I could only have Odell Beckham Jr. or Landon Collins, I take Landon Collins. He's that important. Great teams have had great safety play from Ed Reed to Troy Polamalu to Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Eric Berry. These guys are important. Landon Collins is awesome.
Craig in Essex, what about Odell Beckham? He's not under 25, is he? You have to be under 25 at the start of the season.
Yep.
Like if he did, if,
so
if
you
he's
can't
on
be 25.
Right. If he's out, if he's under 25 and you did not mean your top 20? Right.
So Odell Beckham is 25 currently.
Oh, okay, fill the list out. That's it.
So you have to be 24 or less.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
All right.
That's insane.
Question number five. The Cleveland Browns will be on HBO's Hard Knocks this season. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
I think that's a big deal. I want to see it. I'm going to eat that thing up. I love it. They wanted them to eat. They said, we want Cleveland. We want everything it brings. We want Baker Mayfield, the number one pick. We want the dysfunction. We want the trades, the moves, the 0 and the whatever, the 1-15, the 0-16, and we want to see what you improve on. We'll eat all that up.
I agree. I think if you're going to have Hard Knocks, you've got to have a team that's either is absolutely hideously bad or is really, really good and has to have a lot of strong personalities. I agree. That's exactly what I was going to say, Arnie, about anything with Baker Mayfield is going to be interesting.
Yep.
And the cameras are going to be trained on him an awful lot as if he doesn't have enough pressure coming in. I like the idea of looking and getting into the mindset of a bunch of guys that have just gone 0-16. Where's their head at? What's their confidence level? Are they faking it? Are they just saying the right thing for the camera? This should be fun.
And also the new guys that weren't a part of that. I mean, this team's got a lot of new players from Jarvis Landry, who was brought over from the Dolphins, from Carlos Hyde, who was previously with the 49ers. This team has brought in some significant pieces, and they've still got head coach Hugh Jackson there. I'm interested in his angle, but the 0-16 angle, the new players trying to get out of the Brown stigma and Baker Mayfield. I've never watched Hard Knocks religiously. I'll watch this.
All right, there you go. Big deal, little deal, no deal. Coming up next as we finish off hour number one, clean up your act. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Phone lines are now open. Get ready to call in at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Going to finish off hour number one with Clean Up Your Act. And let me tell you this right off the bat. Shame on you two guys. Shame on these Celtic fans. Was what J.R. Smith did in game two with the push in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would have done that to me. I would have done a Danielson leg sweep on you on the next layup. I would have low bridged you and split your head open if there even would have been a game.
No, you wouldn't have because you didn't do that to the guy who hit you in the elbow yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I got back at him. I got back at him.
And how did you get back at him?
Oh, he started to hand check me, and I took his hand and swept it away and took the elbow up to his ear.
You do realize that guy's listening to the show, and he's going, that isn't even close to what actually happened.
No, it is, because he's like 5'3".
5'3", okay.
And like, no, I'm serious, he's like 5'3".
So you've got like an inch on him.
Like a 120 soaking wet, too. So he was like a tiny little guy. I'll squash him like a bug, but J.R. Smith... Wow. Clean up your act, for crying out loud. That was disgusting.
Clean up your act. Vegas goalie Marc-Andre Fleury. You thought Brad Marchand is bad. He's now tickling guys that are trying to get in brawls.
Tickle me, Theo.
Tickle me, Fleury.
Actually, tickle me, Fleury. Actually, this is a funny thing. This isn't. I can see where the Marchand thing, you know, basically swapping bodily fluids is probably not in the best interest of a lot of people. This was kind of funny because if you watched it, it was in the heat of the moment, and Wheeler was really going after the Vegas guy. He was furious. So Marc-Andre Fleury simply sticks his finger in Wheeler's ear, an opponent's ear, in the middle of what's about to become a brawl. It just starts tickling his ear.
I think that's called a wet willy.
That's
it's
a
not,
wet willy.
It's not tickling.
Yeah, it's a wet willy.
Well, but
is.
It didn't, I don't know, it didn't look like he was trying to injure him anyway.
No, you're not trying to injure him. If somebody's in your face, do what I do. Do the fake cough or sneeze, and they'll back off real fast. I'm serious.
But it's just one of those things I've never seen before, and I love the fact that it was at the height of a battle.
Clean up your act, Yahoo Sports, telling me that fantasy football mock drafts are going on right now.
What?
Stop.
No.
I'm in three fantasy. We are 100 days away from college football, by the way, Arnie. That's your holiday.
Yes,
right?
That, of course.
Clean up your act. Yahoo Sports telling me to register, sign up, and start mock drafting fantasy football on May 17th.
Get out of here.
Can you please explain mock draft? What is the point of mock drafting? Why don't you just draft?
You just want to see how the draft trends are to see like if there are certain guys that are falling later that you don't have to rush on.
All right.
We got to do a big a football draft.
I mean, who am I to say that's kind of pathetic? But wow, I have seven baseball teams, so I probably shouldn't talk.
My team sucked last year. I hated it. I hate playing.
That's because you let your brother draft.
Yeah, I'm not going to let him do that this year. Maybe I'll let him have his own team. See how bad he is. He just sucked. Hour one in the books. Brady's going to have a Sports Center update. We'll come back. Get you ready for hour two. That's next in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Thank you for making us a part of your afternoon routine. People of planet Earth, we appreciate you. The huddle is back right here on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Hour two of the show. Brady, Rich, Arnie, all here. Look at this. Look what happened.
What?
You mentioned fantasy football, Vince. How do I get into your fantasy football league? How do you get? Easy. We're in May. May, June, July. Well, it's only really 3 months. Well, 4 months away, August. And then you draft. When do you draft? End of August, right?
End of August.
So you got. Well, so you got less than 4 months, but still.
Can we just enjoy summer first?
Yeah, we have to have a league where it's just with the listeners again, like we did last year. That was a lot of fun. What's the most teams you could have in a league? 16, or is that?
Yeah,
really?
You could have 16.
We should have 32. Then we'll
Why
see how 16 much.
16
really...
when you can have like six and have a much better chance of
well,
winning.
Well, because we have a lot of listeners that want to play, though.
Trust
you know,
me, I got
part.
We got big plans for fantasy football this year.
Can you play with 32, or is that too many?
No.
Is that just too many out there?
We got big plans for fantasy football, and we got big plans for some other stuff too. I can't say it yet because it's not done and signed on. But
we could have two conferences. No, but then some people have doubled. Well,
how about eight divisions of four teams each? It's like the NFL.
Yeah, that's true. But then some people, well, not real. But then
there'd just be no talent left to go around.
Well, I don't know about that.
And
that
every like two players,
every quarterback in the league would be on a team. Yeah. So
how great would that be? Huh?
It'd be a lot.
See,
of pressure.
That would be fun, Brady. You would love that in baseball. Yeah. You totally eat that stuff up with the. You follow AAA. What are you? Not, you love that stuff.
Yeah, but I don't want to play fantasy with 32
well,
teams.
Yeah, I
30
know that,
teams.
And already the gloating is starting. Yeah. Mike from Swanton says, I've won my league 4 years in a row now, and I need new blood.
We're still 4 months away.
It's too easy for him.
We're still 4 months away. What's wrong with you people? Relax.
Football. What's football?
Fantasy football.
We haven't even gotten to summer yet.
By the way, that's now like a $1 billion industry. Seriously, is that am I crazy about that?
Absolutely. And then
that's insane.
When we throw in legalized gambling, it's going to get even more fun.
I wonder if you're going to be. You know, they've done that before. Gambling on, it's like fantasy football type. I've seen that before in Vegas.
Well, they do the DraftKings and FanDuel, which are
like
you know, daily fantasy.
Yeah, but that they tried to stop that,
yes.
And I don't even know what the heck you know what's going on with the. Rules with them. That's way above my pace.
Well, we already have our commissioner, Jake, and Williston just said he'll set it all up for us. 16 to 32 teams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then you got to know football, man.
You by know what the, by the time on. You get around to the second round, you're getting the third string punter from Jacksonville.
Jeez.
I mean, you're right, though. There wouldn't be much left
no,
to pick.
No, that would kind of suck.
You're
that
picking up the scraps by the third round.
I could do 16 tops. Yeah. 20, maybe. You know, but otherwise, yeah, you're getting out to the bare bones. That's too much. And I'm taking people I don't even watch or know. Or,
in the third round.
Yeah, no injured list or anything like that. All right, Brady, who do we have a chance to catch up to?
Yeah, earlier today I had a chance to catch up with Dick Geron, okay, former NFL player and former head coach with both the Bears and the Bills. And he won Coach of the Year back in 2001 as he led the Bears to the playoffs. So I simply started off by asking him, Coach, how are you?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Oh, now, see, I knew I was going to mess it up. I did tell him that he and I were starting off on a bad note.
Should have just played it off.
There's nothing to start. Yeah. I told him that he and I were starting the interview off on a bad note.
Okay.
And here's how he responded. So I said, Coach, you and I are starting the interview on a bad note.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. 2008 is the year. Fall of 2008. It's my first weekend at college. I'm a diehard Seattle fan. My roommate's a diehard Bills fan. I believe the final score, 31-6 Buffalo, and Roscoe Parrish ran all over the field, and you set me up for a very miserable first weekend of college.
Well, I like that. I like that. It probably helps set the tone for your life.
Yeah,
there are disappointments along the way.
then that was certainly one of them. Although, ironically enough, now you weren't the coach of the Bills at this time, but one of my last weekends of college was the Seahawks thumping Buffalo, so I got back at him 4 years later.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned those two teams, because one of my favorite players of all times is Marshawn Lynch, and he ended up, we drafted him in Buffalo, and then we sent him to Seattle, and he's a legendary player and a great teammate.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that later in the interview. I can only imagine the stories you have about Marshawn Lynch. Was he as eccentric early on in Buffalo as he ended up in Seattle?
Yeah, he had his quirks, but I'll tell you that, in my opinion, and I talked to a number of the other players too, before and after he was there, but or during and after he was there, but he was as good a teammate as you'll ever have. And none of his quirks ever affected his preparation. He was a hard worker in practice, as hard as I've ever been around. And the best thing about him was he embraced his teammates as long as they gave the effort. And it didn't matter if they were practice squad player or the starters. He liked them all, and he was good to all of them. I really am an admirer of this man, you know, and what he's done with his career, for sure, and what he's done in lots of parts of his life.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Marshawn so early in the interview, too, because another guy who was a former Bill and a former Seahawk for a brief time was Fred Jackson, who was one of my all-time favorite Buffalo Bills. And I spent all 4 years of college watching Bills games. Tell me about Fred Jackson.
Oh, we love Fred Jackson. First of all, he's a co-college graduate, which is Marv Levy's school. You know, that's where Marv went to school. And a very, very class act. Once again, a great teammate and a great talent. You know, there was talk early with him because he was not really big for a running back, but we talked about moving him to either wide receiver or defensive back, and we were certain that he could play any of them. But we thought, well, let's let him try his position, and he was just outstanding, just outstanding.
We're talking with former NFL head coach Dick Geron, coach of the year with the Bears back in 2001, also coached the Buffalo Bills. And Dick, well, you were preparing with the Bears, you got to coach against Brett Favre, and with the Bills, you got to coach against Tom Brady. Are there any similarities, any major differences between preparing for Favre and Brady, two of the best ever?
Other than the fact that they're both Hall of Fame players, that, you know, they have this unique skill set. Brett was probably more, I don't want to say ad-lib, because probably the wrong word, but he was more of a freewheeler, you know, and I don't pretend to know either one of them very well personally, although I was on the staff with Brett, but I was on the defensive side of the ball, really admired him, certainly talked to him a lot. But he could, you know, I guess my best way to explain him, at least the way I felt about him, was, you know, when they had all the controversy about the deflated balls, right?
Yeah.
People would say to me, what do you think of that? I said, any quarterback that I've ever known knows all about the football. They, you know, why wouldn't they? This is what they do for a living. I said, the only guy that I ever thought maybe didn't really care was Brett. You know, I thought, you could put a rock on the field and he'd go and beat you with it. He'd find a way to throw it. He'd run around with it. Now, that doesn't do him service either, because clearly he cared. He knew all about the football, too.
Yeah.
But he's kind of had that attitude. You know, it's like snow, rain, sleet. He didn't care. he'd go out and beat you in it. And, of course, Tom Brady will beat you in anything, too, and has.
Dick, your last coaching job was in Cleveland, and you were the defensive coordinator there. And you had mentioned to me when we were setting up the interview that you weren't watching as much modern-day football. You weren't watching as much football since you got out of coaching. Is there a specific reason for that? Burnout? You didn't like the way the game was trending? Is there a reason for that?
No, I really like professional football, and I definitely was not burned out. Just some personal issues that consume my time. My wife is not well. She's in full-time care, and that's really why I left the game. She's got early onset Alzheimer's, and for those who are out there dealing with it, my heart goes out to you, and God bless you, you know. But that's really why I left the game. I had no desire to retire, but I had really no desire to leave her by herself as much as I needed to as a coach, you know. So that's why I did it, and I do miss it, but I don't
you know, I don't have the time or the energy to put into it right now, to stay up with it like I used to.
Well, we're certainly wishing your family the best as well, and obviously a challenging time. And it's hard to transition off that note, but I did want to ask you about some of the relationships that you were able to forge in the game, because we hear that a lot about how football is a brotherhood and it opens up doors for people. Who are some of the most interesting and influential people that you've gotten to come across in your time in the game?
Well, there are an awful lot of them, as you kind of alluded to there, but Dick LeBeau comes to mind immediately. You know, I was so lucky to play for him in Cincinnati. And, you know, I was introduced to him earlier, too, because I came in as a rookie in Detroit the year after he retired. So I was playing defense with a number of the players that he had played for, and they were always talking about it, and they were telling stories about him. And then in my sixth year, I went to Cincinnati, and I got to play for him in my seventh or eighth, I think my eighth year, I actually got to play for him in Cincinnati. And just a phenomenal man and a phenomenal coach and a character, you know, one of those ones you write about. But just a great human being, a very, very bright coach, obviously. So he's probably at the top of the list, you know. But there are so many people, you know, in the league. Tom Coughlin was great to me, gave me my first coordinator's job in Jacksonville. He and I were assistant coaches together in Green Bay. That's how we connected. And again, a great man, just a great man. In Buffalo, you know, I got to know Marv Levy. He was the GM my first year there. And as great a coach as he is, he's a better person. He's just, you know, you can't say enough good things about these people. They're just high quality individuals, you know, on and off the field.
Yeah. Dick, we'll get you out of here on this last question. We mentioned you were coach of the year with the Bears back in 01. You went 13-3 and went to the playoffs. That is the year that September 11th happened. Just kind of take me back to that time. How were you guys able to, you know, in the face of that national tragedy, put together such a special season?
Yeah, that was an awful day. You know, I'll never forget that day, sitting in my office, getting ready and seeing, you know, kind of watching that whole thing unfold in our hearts, as long as the hearts with everybody in the world, you know, went out to the people. And we had a remarkable team that year, a very, very close team, you know, had the right mixture of young players, some great young players. You know, obviously, Brian Urlacher is going into the Hall of Fame this year. I'll mention him. I won't mention anybody else because they were all so good, but Brian deserves a call out for his Hall of Fame career. And so that was a very, very talented team and a tight team. And I think, obviously, that tragedy brought everybody together in the country and brought our team together, too, closer together.
Dick Geron, former NFL player, played his college ball at Yale, is in the College Football Hall of Fame, and former head coach with both the Bears and the Bills. Dick, we appreciate the time, the perspective, the stories, and sincerely, we wish your family the best.
Thanks very much, Brady. Good to talk to you.
All right, there you go. Dick Geron, former head coach of the Bears, the Bills. He played at Yale?
Yeah.
I was going to say, now, I'm not up on my history as maybe, well, you'll have to Google this, I'm sure, but did he play with any presidents? Because didn't we have a president or two that actually played Yale football?
Didn't George Bush play Yale football? Or is it baseball?
Talking about senior, right? No. Junior didn't play anything. I don't think. He was like a cheerleader or something. No, I'm serious. No,
he was the mascot.
I'm being serious. He was a male cheerleader. I think
he
that's
was the
true.
Bulldog.
He was part owner of the Texas Rangers.
Well, that's true, too. He's the one that traded
Sammy Sosa.
No, good move there, Junior.
George Bush, the young George Bush, played for Yale. I'm looking at a picture of him.
What? And how old is George? Well, he's a lot older than Dick Geron is, so they wouldn't have played at the same time. No?
Sticks up there.
George W. Bush is 71. Dick Geron is 67.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's not much difference.
Wow. It could have been like a senior freshman thing. Wouldn't that be cool to have known a president? You played on the same team as him? And, you know, next thing you know, gosh, how cool is that, man?
He played. George Bush was on the team in 68. So we can look at. I can start looking up years.
Yeah. And then Dick Geron would have had to have been. what, four
George
years?
Bush was at Yale in the Harvard-Yale tie game that was...
Oh, was he?
Remember that? That's
no,
right.
I don't know how you know
Harvard
that.
It said Harvard beats Yale 29-29.
I don't know how you know that.
George Bush was a cheerleader.
Yeah, I told you that. I wasn't making that up.
Brilliant.
Yes.
I have to really go through and find all this. Yeah, but that, yeah,
that's funny, man.
Go
yeah.
team, go.
Oh, there's a lot of our presidents played sports. No,
so...
know.
During this time, he was a cheerleader and a member of Delta Kappa Epsilon.
Teak House, the Teaks.
Okay, serving as president of the fraternity during his senior year. He became a member of blah, blah, blah. He was a rugby union player, was on Yale's first something.
Yeah, he was a partier junior. So, and a cheerleader.
You didn't well, if you're a rugby player, trust me, you're a partier. I've never met one in my life that isn't.
That's too funny. So, good to hear Dick Duron. And, I had some interesting stuff. I was surprised about the Marshawn Lynch thing where he said he was a really good teammate because I'm not a big fan of Marshawn Lynch. You know
because
that.
Because of the media stuff or because of the multiple arrests?
Not even the multiple arrests. It's antics. It's a lot of the antics, the stuff on the sideline and –
the grabbing your crotch and all that?
Yeah, I don't even remember all the stuff that he's done over the course of the years. There was controversy here, there. I mean, he said he's the one that says he hasn't been standing for the anthem, too, for like a million years, but that's not true because we actually have pictures of him standing, but what the hell, don't let the facts get in the way. But it just overall, I just don't find him a likable guy. To be
well, honest. He liked him. I will say, I have never heard anything bad about Marshawn Lynch from people who have been associated with him. And so your opinion of him from afar is your...
Well, that's how we all do all athletes.
I feel the same way Arnie does, just from afar. I know nothing about Marshawn Lynch. Right. He doesn't know I exist, and he doesn't care, and that's fine.
Right.
But he just comes across to me as a prima donna and a guy who's just has no interest in... I think he plays games with the media, and I'm part of the media, so I'm never for that.
Well, Dick Duron does know him and knows him well, so I'll take what Dick Duron says there and take that as more gospel than what either one of us have to say about him.
And then there's actually guys that are come off real mean in the media that are actually good. I think Russell Westbrook behind closed doors is a really pretty cool guy, to be honest with you.
And I suspect Popovich is probably okay, too.
Just like Belichick is supposed to be a good guy.
That I don't believe. I'm never going to believe that.
Just win, baby.
I don't believe that at all. Yeah, he's got a great sense of humor. Yeah, do a 30-second stand-up. I bet you the guy doesn't know one joke.
I would pay every penny I have. That would be about $24 at the current moment, but I'd still pay it all to see Bill Belichick do a 5-minute stand-up routine. Maybe down at the Vermont Comedy Club.
You know the show, they used to have a show, Make Me Laugh? If Belichick was on it, would just see, make me crack a smile. You know, if you could make him just crack a smile, like a Mona Lisa smile, just a little bit, then you win because he's not laughing. I bet you he could sit there all day and just not even blink at your.
He laughs when he wins Super Bowls. I always see him smiling then.
I do see him smiling then. And that's the once a year. It's like Christmas.
Well, they had the big emotional win this year.
But going to the Super Bowl after
Jacksonville win.
I'm like, wow, look at him. Yeah. It's like he's smiling
every
laughing.
Now and then. And he opened up a little bit with the Bill and Bill thing. A little bit.
With the 30 for 30.
30 for 30, you mean, yeah.
Well, yes, it was called Two Bills.
Yeah, I know.
The Two Bills, I'm thinking of Tom against time. Yeah. Bill against Bill.
Yeah, I'm just not a Belichick fan, no doubt about that. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Well, first off, remember, you can always listen to us because we did get this text from Adam in South Burlington who said he's been listening to us on his Amazon Echo. So if you have an Amazon Echo, you have an Echo Dot, all you need to ask, A-L-E-X-A, is enable 101.3 ESPN. And then once you've done that, all you need to do is just say open 101.3 ESPN every time they're on out. So if you don't a lot of people don't have actual radios in their car or in their house, rather, then you have that smart speaker. You can listen to us all through the house.
Brady, believe it or not, there was times, forget about getting radio stations from other places. We couldn't get radio stations in our own town because we had transistors and you couldn't get them all. You know what I mean? You had to light up that little red line to you know where it was.
Oh, tell me about it. I was trying to figure out why you always spell that person's name out. And I just realized because if you say it, it comes alive. Well, it's sitting right there on the console.
It's not even if I say it for us, it's for... Everyone who has one in their house is going to get tripped up by me saying it. So if they're listening and I say, hey, A-L-E-X-A, do this, it's going to do that for everyone that's around us.
It's like when you're, at some store with a 2-year-old. It's like, oh, there's a T-O-Y shop. Let's make sure we don't go there.
Exactly. All right, so there you go. That's how you can listen to us if you have one of those devices. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
I don't want to say the name.
Yeah.
A crazy idea. Another crazy idea to fix baseball. What do we make of this one? We'll talk about that.
All right, that's next. You are in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Everyone is listening to the huddle. It's almost like we've got a quarter of a billion listeners per month. All right. This is The Huddle with Rich Hardy and Brady on 101.3 ESPN. Let's go!
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. A busy Thursday moving along here. Brady, you're going to get a little baseball in. What's going on? That was me stumbling over my words.
Makes it sound like it's something bad.
Yes, yes, exactly.
No, I look forward to this the whole show.
So last Friday, we talked about a radical idea that you and I were on board with, Rich. And the idea was to limit or alter the shift. Maybe not get rid of it, but limit it or alter it.
I was for getting rid of it.
So, and the reason being, well, pitchers already have a huge advantage. They're striking everybody out. Let's not take away all the balls that are put in play and say that they're all outs.
Buster's against that, yes. Against getting rid of the shift.
Yes, Buster is against it. We read another article today, and it was by Jason Stark in The Athletic, and he was talking with, I think, David Sampson, who's the guy who was with the Marlins in their front office, their president or GM. But he was their GM before Derek Jeter came in and cleaned house. He had an idea, Rich, that said that one of his ideas to fix baseball is to limit the numbers of throws over to first base. And the thought being that if you just say you're only allowed to throw over two times for every runner, you're only allowed to throw over two times.
Yep.
Well, then eventually the runner either knows that you can't throw over anymore and they're just going to take off, or the runner knows that you've only got one throw left and they're trying to figure out when you're going to use it. And his thought was, the stolen bases become obsolete practically. It would create more stolen bases. It would create bigger leads, which would allow more first to thirds, more first to homes, more chances for action in the game. That was his thought. I cannot get on board with that, but you are wrestling with it.
I wrestled a little bit with it until I thought it over and looked into it. I agree that there needs to be something done that creates more action. But you can't possibly I'm an old-time purist who wants the game to not change all that much. I mean, I love the idea of the shift, and that was pretty drastic for me. This one is ridiculous. You cannot have a situation where you got Trey Turner, D. Gordon, whatever, on first base, and you're allowed two throws over there. You use the two. He jumps back, and he takes off because he knows you can't throw over there.
Yeah, but you could get around that. Throw it to the second baseman. Now what are you going to do?
Oh, man.
And let the second baseman chase him back. Oh. I mean, there's always ways around it. If you have a shift on, you could throw it to the first, second, or shortstop, couldn't you?
All right. Well, how does – I mean, that sounds like a silly thing, but that does create a problem for this rule.
The only way I think you could ever do this is if you just said that, okay, you can't throw over – but there's a limit to how far the runner can leap.
Oh,
that's the only way.
I just feel like we're over. It's becoming too complicated now. Are you going to put a little white line as to how far they can go on the field?
You probably would, and I don't like it.
No,
I'm not okay with that rule change. But it was interesting, and David Sampson, props to him for keep thinking outside the box, but I'm not okay with that.
And I'll tell you what, there's very few things that that's right up there with the refs that just will not drop the bleeping puck in the NHL.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what throwing over to first base reminds me. What is the reaction of 99% of the fans when an away pitcher throws over to first, even once? Boo. They hate it. Everybody, that's a part of baseball that I think everybody hates. And yet, you can't take it away because you can't just let the guy go to second base knowing you can't throw over there.
Then why don't you just be like Little League Baseball where you can't leave until the ball crosses home plate?
Yeah.
So therefore, there's no stealing until the ball crosses home plate.
Yeah, Deke Gordon would finish leading the National League with, or I guess American League now, with eight steals.
Brian Fairfax. And I asked you guys this last time. Brady said, why is it so hard for professional baseball players to hit the ball to the opposite field when the shift is on? I mean, it's a legitimate question, Brady, because they used to do that back in the day. They would swipe it and, you know, take a little, you know, poke it to left or poke it to right. Hit them more at eight, right, Rich? Isn't that what they're saying?
Well, we if you didn't hear it last week when we talked about this, the problem with the shift is that now everybody's upswinging. They're swinging up at the pitch, and that's creating a ton more strikeouts and less action.
So the way that people are trying to beat the shift, as you said, Rich, is they're trying to hit it over the shift. We're just going to hit home runs. If you're going to put players in all these positions, we're just going to hit it over. So to your point, why is it hard? Well, there's a lot that goes into it, but here's my simple answer. Number one, if I'm going to put everybody on the second base side,
you're
going
to pitch to that side.
I'm going to pitch to that side.
Right.
So now I'm going to throw 97 miles an hour in on your hands, and you're going to be forced to start your swing earlier, and you're going to pull right into that shift. You are not taking 97 on your hands and barreling it up to hit it to left field. You're not even squibbing it to third base
point. Wait a minute. If you want me to hit it to the shortstop third baseman side, then I want to poke it to right field.
No, I'm talking about a lefty at this point.
Okay.
I want you to roll over it and hit it to first, hit it to the second base, first base side.
Okay.
So I'm going to throw 97 under your hands, and you're not going to be able to dictate that ball going to the left side. You're just not going to do it. And then the other thing is that pitchers have gotten so good that the days of you getting 4 or 5 hits in an inning, those days are over on the norm. They do happen occasionally, but you don't see too many 4 or 5 hit innings anymore. So you talk about, hey, let's manufacture a run and let's hit 4 singles and just beat the shift every time. Yeah. That's not happening. Noah Syndergaard is not allowing you to get 5 singles in one inning. He might give you 1 bleeder and 1 homer, and that's your best chance to score.
Jamie in St. Albans, another question. If you run out of throws to first, can you just step off the rubber as many times as you want?
Probably.
That's a great point, and that just adds to our case.
What does that do? If you step off the rubber, then you can throw the first? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, you cannot throw to first. That's another question.
Or can you
chase step off
the
rubber and then throw to first?
You would just step off the rubber, and that's how you would control the game. And then the game would just be this endless cat and mouse.
But you could throw to first.
To second. You can't throw to first if you step off the rubber, can you? See, this is the details I don't know about.
Or is that part of the 3 or 2 throws?
In real baseball, under today's rules, if you step off the rubber, you can throw to first.
Right, yes. But his point is good because this stepping off the rubber defeats the purpose of limiting the throws over to first because it just keeps stopping and delaying the game.
Yes, but so as far as who you can throw it to, I don't even think that matters. Sure, I can't throw it anymore, but I'll just keep stepping off.
I couldn't be more sure. The shift, yes, absolutely. The second baseman, first baseman must start as the pitch comes in to the right of second base. The shortstop, the third baseman, must be to the left of second base. But this one is crazy. There's too many things that can go wrong with it.
What about the idea Buster Olney had yesterday, which I am on board, I think, with what Buster had to say?
Best idea I think that I've heard, that teams could be limited, except in cases of injury or in blowouts, to using 4 pitchers in a 9-inning game. I think that would be a great improvement because I think it would, again, increase the importance of the starting pitcher back to a degree that the game needs it.
That, to me, is better maybe even than the shift, Rich.
Wow.
4 pitcher max, and you have caveats, injury and blowout, where you don't. So if you're down 10, then sure, you can have other guys come in. But I like that a lot.
I kind of like that.
Talk about a specialist for pitchers. All right, you're going to go the 5th and 6th every night, and this guy's going to go the 7th and 8th, and then you're closing.
Yeah, but it would limit specialists for the most part because that one batter lefty specialist wouldn't exist. Now, the players' union will balk at that because you're taking away jobs from players.
Sure.
Just like how you talk about, Arnie, we were talking
about
this.
Are you really? You still have, 25 and 10, aren't you?
Yeah, but you're not going to need 12 or 13 pitchers if you're only going to use four of them max a night.
Yeah, but you know what? It would just make you plan on your 4 nights. Suppose, if one guy's going to get chilled like crazy, you got to keep him in there,
The one batter specialist would be done.
Yes. Right,
and that's
exactly
where you would take away, kind of like the kick returner. We were talking about this in break. If they get rid of kick returns, then certain players become rendered obsolete in football. If you change this, then the lefty specialist goes away. But I think I like that rule. It puts a bigger importance on the starting pitcher. It requires more versatility in your relievers, guys who could throw multiple innings. It keeps the game. We're talking about pace of play. It keeps the game going faster. I like that.
All right, you answer this. Jamie's starting to fight with you. He says you're incorrect. If you're off the rubber,
I'm well aware of the rules of baseball.
He
Jamie
says if you're off the rubber, the ball is not in play. You wanted to get that in there. And Glenn and Moncton said, read that. I don't even know what he's writing.
Isn't where they normally stamp technically a shift for right-handed hitters, but we have no problem with that. Lefty discrimination.
I don't understand that.
I don't.
If you're off the rubber, the ball is in play. Once the umpire has put the ball in play, it doesn't matter where you're standing. The ball is in play and action can happen.
He just said I was incorrect, Arnie,
not
Brady.
Oh,
he, just, he just wrote that in his
As usual, everyone's just mad at Arnie.
No, he wrote that I was incorrect, Arnie, not Brady.
I see. Okay. I just assumed everyone's always mad at you.
I take back my anger at Jamie.
Okay, there you go there.
Ain't technology grand?
Yeah, Town Fair Tire text line.
Arnie needs to stop reading texts.
No, I love reading. Are you kidding me? Ever since we got the Town Fair Tire text line, it really has changed the whole show.
But just reiterating what we're talking about, I mean, I think the thing about the four pitchers is just so much easier. There's no gray area here, and I kind of like that. That's an appealing thing to me. Plus, it's Buster who's my hero, so yeah. I figure everything he says is right.
And everyone can go. You're not going to get three pitching changes an inning.
Right, but the thing about throwing over to first base, I just think there's too much gray area there.
Why would you say it would take away jobs?
Because the lefty specialist wouldn't exist.
Right, but you're still, first of all, you're saying that but instead of the lefty specialist, you're going to add something else because you're still going with 25 and 10, right? Isn't that what the... Well,
yes, yeah. But it's in the same way that if you got rid of the kick returner,
they'll add somebody else. So maybe you're losing the kick returner, but you're going to add a second string punter, a third string offensive lineman, or whatever you're going to add.
I still think the players' union would balk at that.
I'll tell you what. One thing that's going to happen is the pitch counts are going to be way up for the middle relievers, the bridge guys. I mean, everyone's going to have to start going two, three innings every time they pitch, unless you're the closer.
I thought when you say four men, I thought you were going to say. Starter 1A, starter 1B, reliever 1A, and your closer.
Yeah, I mean, is this going to be 3-3-2-1?
And by the way,
and what if it's a 16 inning game?
Yeah, and by the way, if it's only four, well, one's already taken up with your closer with what's his face for the Red Sox already?
Kimbrel.
I mean, so that's one automatically off the bat, right? So it's really only three pitchers,
and it might mean a guy like Kimbrel's going to have to a little bit more consistently throw two innings.
You may need two closers. You may need two closers.
Yeah, that's true.
Did Buster bring up the idea of what happens when it's extra innings?
Would be a caveat that you would build.
Yeah, you'd have to add something to that.
The reliever went 12 innings yesterday.
Get this to real quick because I know Rich is going to love this. Red Sox having their first alumni game.
The Red Sox are playing their first alumni game since 1993. It's coming up. I think it's at the end of May, Arnie. You look it up, Arnie, since you always tell me to look it up. I think
it's May 27th.
May 27th, yeah. See how I got that. But wait. May 27th, yeah. There you go.
So May 27th is before Red Sox Braves. A lot of old-timers coming back to Boston. Rich, are you excited for this?
Sure. I mean, I'd love to see Wade Boggs. He still has, along with Rod Carew, the greatest swing I ever saw.
Pedro's going to be there.
Wade Boggs, will he have chicken before the game? That's what I want to know. I mean, Mike Lowell's on here. Derek Lowe.
I had him on my show when he said something controversial.
Who, Derek Lowe?
Yeah, against the Red Sox. It made, like, national news. Wow.
He was something else. Derek Lowe, who was one of the most underrated postseason players in baseball history.
Mike Greenwell, remember him?
Mike Greenwell, number 39, patrolling the left field wall.
Yeah, it's been a long time. No Louis Tion pitching?
He's the manager.
Oh, is he? Get out of here. I love
him. Him and Dwight Evans.
You know, I want to see his El Guapo and see if he's under 400 pounds. Can you imagine what he must look like right now? I can't believe that guy's showing. He's probably like 150.
Julio Lugo got invited back to the alumni
game. One of the worst signings in the history of the franchise.
You know, most of baseball's for young people. This is really for the people like older 50 that used to watch these guys play. Yeah. You don't have any interest in this, do you, Brady? Because you don't remember any of these guys. This is not
a lot of these guys.
Yeah, but you never watched them live. This is not your error.
Most like Rick Miller.
Yeah, when you get to be 50, you're like, oh my goodness, Jay Buhner.
Yeah.
Do you know Jay Buhner?
Oh, he knows Jay Buhner.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I insult you? I don't know.
And I wonder if Steve Lyons, when he reaches first base, will pull his pants down.
Yeah, there you go. Lyons on that. So you'll be loving the old-timers when you get to be our age. That's for damn sure. Brady, what do we got coming up?
Patriots, they don't have one player in the top 25 under 25. Oh. Are we worried about that?
Oh, I want to give a little of the side story. You're not going to believe what Terrell Davis said that the Patriots need to get and who they should get. I want to get to that one also. We'll get to that next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Studies show that listening to 101.3 ESPN makes you more productive. And we'll prove it when we get around to it. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Remember, Town Fair Tire, text line 802-655-6672. Doug in St. Albans, after the second throw to first, you're only allowed one steal per... First, I don't even
per
know.
Inning.
Per inning.
See, this is you're tinkering too much with the sport.
Yeah, you're butchering it.
Just
up,
like when you put a line there and you can say you can only go this far. Ugh.
No, you're really too much. Yeah. All right, I know we got some Patriots stuff real quick. Terrell Davis, you know, the Hall of Famer, is in the mindset that Adrian Peterson should be the latest line of veterans to come into the Patriots camp and that they could use him.
How?
I'm not so sure that that's a bad idea. It says, when it comes to Peterson, the Patriots were a clear answer in Davis's mind, despite the already crowded backfield that exists on their 90-man roster. Look, you could have Sony Michel, right, and to obviously give him a little bit of relief, it's not bad to have somebody like an Adrian Peterson veteran who had a pretty good game when he first came over to Arizona. Remember that first game when he came from New Orleans?
His one game.
Well, you know what, though? I think he still has a little bit left. It certainly would be a good fit for the Patriots.
Nope.
Tell me why, Brady. Ugh. What's wrong there?
Well, you're fixated on Sony Michel, but they also have Rex Burkhead and James White who are making real money. So those guys are locks on the team. Whether you like it or not, they are locks on the team.
Right. No, I mean, they're locks on the team, but that doesn't still think that I would give the ball to Adrian Peterson. Well, forget the money. But
well, that's three. Yeah. Then they've got Mike Gillisley and Jeremy Hill, who they signed. Now, I think one or both of them are going to be gone.
Right.
But that's five. Brandon Bolden plays special teams. He's going to make this team probably, although I don't even include him as a running back. Then they've got the
if they cut the three, would you want him on the team or no? It sounds like you don't want him on the team.
I don't want the team, and there's no room for him.
Of all the teams I wouldn't send him to, what's he going to do with New England? He's just going to sit there. I mean, he didn't do anything even when they gave him a chance with his teams last year.
I'm just shocked. Because except for Sony Michel, you haven't listed one running back I'd even think about considering give the ball to over Adrian Peterson.
Really?
Yeah. So
I think you're giving – I look at this and say, first of all, I think it's a terrible match. But secondly, I'm like, what has Adrian Peterson shown you that makes you believe he's coming back and running for 1,200 yards?
Yeah, forget that he's a Hall of Famer.
What doesn't matter. What has he done for you lately?
Well, okay, he didn't have the great half a year with or three quarters of a year with the Cardinals. Okay, it's not what you've done for me. What you've done for me lately, I guess, like you said, but
just keep loading up on linebackers. That's what that team needs.
All right, what are the Patriots upset about, Brady?
The Patriots aren't upset about anything.
Oh,
but
I'm sorry.
Let's start some rumors about the Patriots, because that never happens.
So Pro Football Focus had their top 25 players under 25, and the Patriots had none of them. And this is emblematic of a issue the Patriots have had for a while. They are not a young team, and they are not a team full of young stars. And you can say it doesn't matter because right now this team is built around winning now with Tom Brady. But do you consider it a problem that this team does not have young stars?
Isn't it funny? The one young star they had, was he under 25, Jimmy Garoppolo?
No.
They traded away. Oh, he was 26, wasn't he? Or was he older
I
than
think
that?
So.
Yeah,
damn,
yeah,
the one young star they had, though, was the one they traded away.
No, but I mean, you look, and I mean, Trey Flowers, Shaq Mason. I mean, I'm just looking at some of the names.
Those guys were close.
Malcolm Brown. I mean, yeah, there's there's not Dietrich Wise. So, I mean, I'm looking at some of these names. You're right. That guy, I mean, you're right. I think it's a byproduct of what you just said. You know, I don't think you tend to have too many guys that get drafted by the Patriots and immediately become impact players.
You know what I would like to know, and you can't find this out now, but how many players are in the NFL make up under 25? Is it 30%? Is it 50%?
NBA. The NFL is getting to be a younger league.
Yeah. Okay, because it wasn't all that a long time ago that, you know, it was probably a small percentage of under 25 played in the NFL were big stars in the NFL.
The new thing is to listen to your body a little bit more. We're seeing a lot of guys stepping away at 32, 31 with maybe a couple years left, but saying, you know what, I've had enough.
Here's a couple shots to me. Eric in Colchester, Jim Brown's a Hall of Famer, so sign him. And James said, Peterson can't catch.
Nice.
James from Starkboro. Okay, all of a sudden he's just baloney. I'm sorry.
The thing about the Patriots is right now it's okay. I am all for prospects. I am all for cultivating draft picks. I am all for hoarding the young kids, and the Patriots don't have any. Right now that's okay because, well, you have Tom Brady playing at a high level. You need to extract every ounce of winning you have out of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick while they are together. And so that is where my usual philosophy differs. I say, okay, go and trade draft picks for proven players because Brady doesn't have that long left. Whether you think it's 1 year or 4 years, you better try to win in that time and the future be damned. Right. But just understand that when you're going all in now under Tom Brady and you're signing the the veteran players, when Brady goes, there's no bright future to fall back on. Just understand that's the trade-off.
But a 25-year-old now is 29 when Brady retires. You know what I'm saying? So why not? Yeah, why not go with a youngster and bring him along the way?
But you can't assume that he's going to play to 45 just because
says
he's going
to. That's not even the point. If he plays 1, 2, or 3 years.
Plus the Pats haven't really, as you know, they've traded all their draft picks. Not all of them, but It's been very common that the Patriots only have 5-6 picks, maybe on draft day, and a lot of them in late rounds. I mean, they like to do that. They like to pick up guys and give away draft picks to get guys that are in their mid-20s to upper 20s
that have established themselves. That's why I asked Brady, how many people, now there's probably a lot more on the 25 that make a significant difference, but right. You know, not as much as you probably think.
But I also understand, I mean, it's a system. That's the way the system works with a New England system, and it's not conducive to having a bunch of, you know, great young stars that are already, you know, you're not going to get the Jaylen Browns and Jason Tatums in Patriots uniforms, but at the same time, you're right. The cliff is going to be a very long way down when Tom Brady walks away. I'm ready for it, but not just yet.
I did not like that they released Tony Garcia, who was a third-round pick last year in the draft, and they released him, put him on waivers, and the Jets went and got him. The Patriots care so little about the draft that last year I think they only have one player from their entire draft class last season still in the organization. Mm. Now, I understand with a really good team, it's hard for draft picks to make the team. But to only have one from the previous year's draft class, that is a problem.
It's funny how nobody ever calls them out about it.
Your draft picks could be backups. It's not that hard. I mean, if you want to use them as backups and you save yourself some money like that. Some teams actually need them as starters. But the Patriots could have taken their draft picks and used them as backups. Though I guess you're probably paying more money than if you take a unsigned free agent or something.
Let's
like
face
that.
It, the philosophy of this team ever since Belichick arrived 100 years ago is find a guy who's had a C career and turn him into a B-plus player.
Right, right.
I mean, that's pretty much what they've done, and they've had enormous success with it.
You're right. And, again, maybe you don't have to rebuild through the draft. There is a draft, tank this, tank that. Maybe you don't have to tank, whether it's the NBA or the NFL. Maybe tanking is not the answer. You're still getting questions on the baseball, Brady. You have any of them that you want to answer? Because I can't read all of them.
John in
sure.
St. Albans goes, why is being picked off first not considered an attempted steal? Well, the answer is that if you are picked off first base and you get, you know, the throw comes over, you dive back into the bag and you are out, that is a pickoff. However, if the throw comes to first base and you decide to try to run to second, that is considered a caught stealing. If you make a move towards second in the act of being picked off, then it becomes a caught stealing.
And the other thing I find interesting is the catcher's indifference rule on steals. It seems so arbitrary from official scorer to official scorer. It's like, well, what was the difference between that being a stolen base when last night in a different town, the exact same play resulted in catcher's indifference and no stolen base?
And Vince with the anti-Patriot rant.
Oh, that's a shocker.
After Belichick is done, the Patriots will go another 30 years of nothing.
Ah, jealousy.
Vince likes Taco Bell, so he's cool with me.
All right, well, last story standing has to do with Taco Bell. We'll get to that. Plus, I got two last story standing, so we'll get to that both next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, congratulations to Brady.
What'd I do now?
Because of Brady.
Tom Brady?
Because of Brady here. Taco Bell's now become the number one Mexican food chain restaurant, passing Chipotle on the list. That's all because of you, Brady. I want you to know.
Taco Bell, then Moe's, then Chipotle.
Okay, what do you order, the number six?
What do I order at Taco
eight?
Bell?
Number eight?
No, at Taco Bell, I order a number seven.
Six or eight, I said.
I'll tell you my order. Every time I go to Taco Bell, it's close to the same thing. It is a chicken quesadilla with a soft taco.
Yes.
Then it's two more soft tacos.
Wow.
And then it's a Doritos Locos taco with the cool ranch.
Now, wait a minute, though. What kind of hot sauce? Spicy, hot, mild, or?
I use the mild and hot, both.
Oh, a little mixture there. Nope. I love that.
You should see him. He's like a kid in a candy
store.
He is.
Like that.
And of course, he has to drive all the way to St. Albans for this pleasure.
I'll do it. Yeah, it's worth it.
I just get the beef burritos. I could barely eat two beef burritos at the Taco Bell. Ed Orgeron, head coach at LSU, says before games, to get himself pumped up, he chugs a Red Bull in front of the team and then punches himself in the face a couple of times. have you ever had a coach that would do stuff like that, Rich? You're the football player. There's some really crazy, like choke a kid, a chicken or something like that. No, stop it. You know what I'm talking about, like do something to an animal or something like that, you know?
Wow.
I never had a coach get that hyped up, but I did have a coach punch himself in the face once in front of me.
Did he?
Yeah, he was.
Did it work?
well, it was after a game. A guy he was upset about a guy who refused to get in front of a ground ball. He goes, "You got to take it right off the chin," and punched himself.
But you've never had any of that? You were old school.
I just had I had coaches scream at us as a team, you know, during and between games and halftime speeches. And, I mean, we were always losing by 25 at the half anyway, so we just stopped screaming after a while.
We should have taken text on that. How many people have crazy coaches, huh?
You came up with the idea, but you won't be here to implement it
tomorrow. Well, you
guys haven't.
Let me tell you, I bet you there's everybody listening had one crazy coach.
I had a coach get fired for a racist. All kinds of racist, sexist comments, but not like that.
Yeah, I'm just talking about like it would make you run or make you do stupid things. All right, Brady, what's coming up on that Champaign Valley game night?
Coming up, we'll talk about Brad Stevens, and we'll get a little more into the Patriots.
All right, I'm off tomorrow. The guys will be here for Brady, for Rich, I'm Arnie, for intern
Alex. And Alec.
Alec. I told you his name was Alec. And who else?
And intern Kevin.
And intern Kevin. Champaign Valley game night next. You are in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.